I can't remember the exact wording of the question that had been sent in that Steve wrote out, something about the problems of humanity as related to the problems of the planet. I don't know whether it's possible to have it read again just to remind us. I'd be very interested to hear her speaker's comment on that point.
Now, if I remember correctly, this was a question someone wrote in for us to consider at the conference, saying, how can we relate the rights of humanity to the rights of the planet? And what do you think, what rights should humanity relinquish for the good of the greater whole at this point in time? And what human rights are inalienable? Would you like to have a comment on that?
This is a huge question. I wonder what you mean by rights. For example, the rights of animals to not being tortured by mankind for the sake of mankind. I mean, some of the laboratory experiments may be necessary for mankind, and I know some scientists who take extreme care not to torture animals. But then there are others who don't care. Now, we have to draw the line. If we think that humanity is more important, we are always more important to ourselves than the animals, then draw the line. You can use certain animals for laboratory experiments. I don't like it, but never use animals for experiments which lead nowhere. You know, putting a head of a dog on another animal, this is useless. This is abominable, and this is the kind of thing they do. And all the technology that, or the industries that have been going on for the past 30 years in the West, and also in Russia, in that part of the world, has been absolutely a desecration of Mother Earth. And this is what I meant when I mentioned this. And I think this is utterly wrong. We should take into consideration how Earth evolves and how we can fit into the evolution of the Earth. For example, when I was at school, I learned that in a field, you sow about three fields and you leave the fourth one. If you've got four particular fields, you leave fallow the fourth one. Now, we don't do that. I learned that you do not fish at certain epochs of the year because the fish is spawning. But now we don't care about this. I mean, all these things are wrong. Why not learn from the cycles of nature? We are beings of cycles, aren't we? Why not learn from these cycles? Does it answer a little bit this vast question?
Yes, Alice Bailey often talks about the dweller on the threshold, which has to do when you reach a certain point in the path and you have to come face to face with certain things, the dweller on the threshold. And when you were talking about the past 300 years being years of materialism and misapplied values, I thought in a sense we're sort of facing the dweller of the threshold for humanity. And I was wondering if there was anything in Theosophical teachings which deal with this dweller on the threshold.
If there is anything in the Theosophical teaching which deal with this dweller on the threshold, is that it?
Yes.
Well, there is in the Alice Bailey books, definitely. There's a tremendous teaching. for one thing, I think in the Glamour, there is a lot of teaching in the book Glamour. The dwelling on the threshold finally is your own personality, which has to be completely controlled and completely illumined before it can be merged with the soul. So first of all is our selfishness and our ignorance, and all this builds up into a wonderful personality, but even that wonderful personality stands against us at the ultimate moment of realization, and this has been to be transmuted. This is what I understand.
James has a question. Joan.
I was intrigued to hear what you said about Helen Neurich and her work as being intuitive rather than
logical.
Yes. Could you expand on that a little? About
expand on that.
How you think that her teaching will feed into this theosophical line?
I have not studied Helena Roerich as I have studied Alice Bailey. I have read the Agni Yoga book, one book, Agni Yoga, and I have read excerpts from some of the other books, and they struck me as being completely inspired. But there is no teaching for the logical mind. Actually, my mind was going like that. In the Agni Yoga, it was like fire, walking on fire, and I could see the inspiration, the intuition working, but at the logical level, there was nothing. And I felt this book has to be really experienced in silence. That's why I can't speak about Helena Roerich after the greatest admiration for her, but from the logical standpoint, she goes far beyond, whereas Alice Bailey remains at the logical level, even though it's not hers, it's he who stands behind her, gave this magnificent vision which goes beyond the logical, but nevertheless it is expressed in the language of the mind, the language that the mind can grasp, whereas Helena Roerich expresses, of course through words, but through the language that the intuition can grasp. That's how I see it. I mean, somebody else may see it totally differently. You see it differently.
The comment was made that if you read more, you see it differently. The many perspectives on the one.
You spoke beautifully of the ancient wisdom being expressed through all the world religions. And I would like to ask a question about that. I have one quote from Karine Helene which very much applies. It says, "Truth, like a golden thread, binds together all the religions that have been given to the world, making of them a crystal rosary through which shines the eternal white light of the cosmic Christ." And my question is really, if you would comment on what practical evidence do you see of the emergence of a true world religion?
Oh, yeah. But first of all, who wrote that?
Karine Helene.
Who?
Karine Helene.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yes, what practical evidence do I see of the emergence of a world religion? Now, first of all, I see that even the Christian bastion, is becoming acceptable of other religions, first of all. And are you aware that in Glasgow Church, there was a service of thanksgiving just recently for the Gulf War, and the Archbishop accepted that someone of the Jewish religion would read from the Jewish faith and someone of the Muslim would read from the Quran. I mean, this is a tremendous step forward. I was going to mention it in my talk and I forgot. It's tremendous. Now, that's one step forward, but you can see in the great men of the time, for example, Thomas Merton, who understood Buddhism and went over to meet the Buddhists. And even Teilhard de Chardin, who wrote The Phenomenon of Man, and really understood in depth from these men, who else is there? I can't think of anyone else, but there are. I know a Hindu who died now, who went to the Pope and to other Catholics and had a dialogue with the Catholics. I think from these, there is a meeting. This is the first step, isn't it, towards world religion. There is a meeting at the same level. Now, you know, I've been a librarian for 30 years, and I was subject indexing in the British Museum. All the books in the British language, in the English language. And I could see the mind of man developing, unfolding, all the barriers of the 19th century falling. You can see that in the subject index. It's fascinating. And of course, being interested in religion, I looked at all the books on religion that came through my hands, and I could see there is respect now for other religions. It's no longer just the Christian. There is respect for other beliefs. That is a step forward. In the next century, maybe there will be another step forward, which will eliminate the differences. The scholars are still not very happy about eliminating the differences, because they say if you do, then what's left? You see, they don't see what's left is the very core of truth. They don't see that. They see the differences make the different religions. Well, I see that what makes the religion is its very core. And the very core is love one another, do to others what you would they did to you. I mean, that's the core. And that's in all the religions. And Confucius say, do not do to others what you would not they did to you. Well, it's another way of putting the same thing, isn't it?
Oh. Actually, it's just to add a point on the work of Helena Rurich. She also translated the whole secret doctrine into Russian.
Yes.
And
I know.
This year, the Theosophical Society are giving 5,000 copies to Russia as a gift. They had requested 50,000, but as well as doing quite a bit of the Mahatma letters into Russian as well. Quite a valuable contribution in the work she did.
Thank you.
Do you want to comment on that?
No,
before we go
no.
Okay. Well, thank you, Janine. That's been a wonderful sharing, and that's a very good note on which to end, isn't it? This great thirst for